Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
Hello. Welcome to the RTEGA podcast. Mikey Stafford here. We'll talk about football now. Later on, we're going to do a bit of a chat about hurling with Brendan Cummins. But it's that time of year. It's like going to the dentist once a year. I allow it. It has to happen. We have to have the championship structures conversation. So a lot of people said no to this, but Desi Dolan didn't say no. Rory O'Neill is absolutely raring to go. And we have Conor Neville of RTE.ie, who is also a keen man to talk about structures and sport administration in general. It's one of his many, many hobbies. How are we all doing, lads?
Very good, Mikey.
Good. I couldn't get this background off my screen.
It's fine. It's fine. Connor was, if for those of you watching, Connor was taking part in the quiz on behalf of RT Sport this morning. And the important thing is he won. You beat a PR company.
Taking part is not what it's about at all.
No. And you beat a PR company, which is even better again. So well done. So we're here to talk about the state of the All-Ireland Football Championship, which is about a month old now. And I'd say we've had one match, which you would describe as a match, which was Donegal's admittedly thrilling comeback against Derry. But Desi, too often this conversation is oh, it's bad, all right. But that was a good game up in Ulster last week, which has probably been, that's probably been the battle cry for about 10 years now.
Yeah, but I tell you about Leitrim. My father was in charge in 2006, which is 15 years ago, obviously. They played Mayo. They were in Division 4. Mayo got the All-Ireland final, but bet Leitrim in the first round by a point. Usually competitive game, very enjoyable. 15 years later, it really was deplorable on Sunday insofar as the atmosphere was bad. I think I felt sorry for the players of Leitrim. And I know with Leitrim supporters, I'm very familiar with Leitrim football. I'm very familiar with a lot of counties around the Midlands that would be considered the weaker counties. There's a lot of good football people. There's a lot of people trying extremely hard to raise the profile of it. But I do think at this stage that the ship has sailed. It's gone beyond the point of saving the provincial championships because the teams themselves are struggling to get players to play in unrealistic championships where they have no chance of winning anything. Leinster, like you'd think of the teams, Laois are falling off the face of the earth. Carlo, Wexford have gone back a lot. Wicklow have gone back a lot. A lot of teams have gone back. These teams were competitive 15
Longford,
years ago.
Longford took a hiding from Meath.
These teams, Rory, were very competitive. When I started playing for Westmeath, it was 99, and we could play Dublin. But tomorrow morning, you'd say, we'd have a chance. And a chance was enough to get you training. It was a chance. And that players nowadays are looking at it, and they're saying, I'm busy at work. I'm busy at this. And let's say some of them Leitrim footballers realise that, oh, geez, we're playing Mayo in the championship. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm pulling out this panel. I'm not making myself available. I could get a couple of club matches in here. I can enjoy my football. I don't need to stress my life. And that's what Terry Hyland was dealing with coming up to that match. It's gone so far beyond the point of saving the provincial championships. It's ridiculous. They need to act. They need to make the proper decision. And they need to make changes rapid because these counties are falling, are dying on their feet right now.
Yeah. Rory, I take Desi's argument, and it's a very fair argument. The other argument I would make, though, is that this is a massive problem for the GAA because I am, I'm the editor of a website, a sports website. I'm supposed to watch as much sport as I can. I'm the presenter of this podcast. I watched the first 5 minutes of the Leitrim match the other day, mainly so I could text a friend of mine from Leitrim and say, that was a good first 3 minutes. I'm going back to watch the Tour de France now. And I did this because it was in a WhatsApp group with a guy from Mayo. And the guy from Mayo was as bored and probably wasn't watching the match either. This is not a product that people want to watch. The Tour de France on Sunday was great. The first match on Sunday wasn't, sorry, it wasn't watchable. And I know you worked very hard on producing that show, but it wasn't a sporting event anybody really wants to watch.
Well, it certainly says something when cycling is more interesting to watch than Gaelic football. You know, Mikey, that's definitely into dangerous territory. I think this is a problem. I think Desi's spot on. I think like it's been 20 years in the making. One of the most worrying aspects for me were Larry McCarthy's comments yesterday about not pushing any panic buttons just yet. Like the panic button probably should have went off about 10 or 15 years ago.
Should be worn out by now, really.
Like that, to me, was very strange comments coming from somebody who probably should be able to realize and recognize that there is a massive, massive problem here. A fundamental question that I would be at pains to ask any of our pundits whenever they go on or whenever we are discussing this is, what level or onus of responsibility is on the governing body to provide a coherent program of games so that every team can compete at a level to keep lads incentivized to continue playing inter-county football? That's it. And the current model is broken. I know people, one of the things that I find absolutely baffling and very amusing actually is there seems to be this very smug and almost sort of contented attitude out there that, oh, look, it's been looked at and it'll be all sorted by the special Congress in September when this will be all changed. It might not be changed. It might not be changed. And if I was a betting man, which I am, if you were to ask me which of the three proposals, because there are three, I would 100% back the status quo being left remain and to remain in situ. 100%. Not because the status quo is any good, but the other two are so devoid of imagination and massively flawed. I just don't, it's deeply frustrating. It's very depressing. I think Kieran Whelan mentioned something similar to what Desi just spoke about there in terms of the players that become disheartened year on year, massive player turnover. And you're dealing with this in counties that are struggling to compete. And it's the counties that don't have these issues, of course, then. And the train is just pulling further and further away. And the gap now between the haves and the have-nots is, it's just, I mean, I don't know. Like, what do we want here? You know, like.
There's an argument out there, Connor, that, you know, the provincial championships have to be kept because, you know, we've always had them. They've been there since this is our tradition. This is what we do. But, you know, gangrene used to be cured by amputation. And, you know, we don't do that anymore because, you know, a better way was found. So I'm setting you up here because like, one of the reasons you're on beyond your, you know, your laconic.
I'm here. I've been roped in as the guy who's going to say something outrageous on the panel.
Well, you've written several times that, you know, you.
Hang on. Yeah, no, I would say the provincial championships and the focus on them are a bit of a sidestep, in my view. The issue is the growing disparity between teams and how that's come about. Yeah. What people are really talking about when they talk about getting rid of the provincial championships, I think, is a tiered championship. Because if you just got rid of the provincial championships and left it as an open draw, I mean, what's the difference between Dublin hammering Wexford and Dublin hammering Leitrim? They hammered Wexford this year. But like there isn't, the geographic boundary isn't the significant issue. The issue is the tiers. I find the focus on the provincial championship a curious sort of euphemistic way of framing the fact that what people are really saying is that Leitrim have no business playing Mayo. And that's what people are really saying. So I think that's the heart of the issue. And it, you know, there was talk, if the argument for the provincial championship, I don't think should be an argument for the status quo because it can't, status quo can't exist. The idea is to wrap a tiered championship around the provincial championships.
Yeah. Okay.
Or else the alternative is to just dispense with the notion of the provincial championship and just start with the tiers, go to a kind of league system basically.
Yeah, well, they haven't, I'll very briefly go through this now just to explain it to people. There are three proposals. The third one, as Rory said, his favorite, as in the one he thinks is going to be voted in, is the status quo where we keep the provincial championships, we finally kick the Tailteann Cup into gear and pretty much things stay the same. The first proposal is shift the provinces around a bit so that you end up with four groups of eight. So you'd have a few two counties from Leinster going to Munster, one going to Connacht, and one Ulster county going to Connacht. And then those provinces would operate two groups of four, round robin, winners of each group play each other in provincial final, bottom team of each group going to the Tailteann Cup, and the middle two teams go into the qualifiers. And then the championship kind of proceeds in the qualifier to quarterfinal, to semi-final, to final, where Dublin and Kerry will play. So it won't change that much. And the second proposal is basically the league becomes part of the championship. the top five teams in Division One, the top three teams in Division Two, and the winners of Division Three and Four proceed to the Sam Maguire, and all the other teams proceed to the Charlton Cup. There's a lot more intricacies to that and stuff, but you know, we don't need to go into that. We want to try and keep a few listeners here. Desi, do either of those appeal to you? Are they drastic enough, or do you have you, like every other Gaelic football fan, sketched out your own plan on the back of an envelope at some point?
Do you know all I want is change? Possibly, like, do you know, I don't care what
any
it is.
Change, any change will do.
Any change is the first step towards GA doing something constructive. And that is what I'd be calling for. And even if it's not ideal in the first year or two, then you start tweaking that and pulling that and changing that. To be honest, if you're in Division 4 and Division 3, not so much 1 and 2, but Division 4 and Division 3, that's all that counts for you in terms of playing inter-county football at the minute, really. Because that's where you make your progress. That's where you see what your level is at, and that's where you see if you're realistic at winning anything. And that's really what it's all about. And to be honest, I do probably favour linking the National League or the league with progression, and at least Division 4 and Division 3 teams have an opportunity to possibly, you know, like get back into it. You know the way there's always a team that has a good year and they're going pretty well, like, and I think that's important that they're not dismissed out of the competition totally. I do think, and Rory might come in on this, but I do think when you're talking Tailteann Cup and stuff like this, I do think media attention is really important. I would love for the GPA to do something constructive. I'm not a fan. I just feel like that if they could organize with the players or the GA to maybe have matches on a Friday night and do something that can offer, you know, like you're saying to the TV
or
companies.
Or a Monday night.
As in, like, people, there's an appetite there to watch games. I do see it. But going head-to-head with some of the big championship matches that could be taking place is not ideal. And certainly Friday night is an ideal opportunity. But because the players are amateur, there's obviously issues around that. And that's where I see the GPA getting involved and getting proactive and doing something constructive to help out the players in the weaker counties.
LGFA have cracked that nut, haven't they? There's regularly Friday night matches.
Apps, and like they do it so well. And there's no big issue. But like the ladies' football are leaving the men's football in the stone ages. Like the ref cams, everything that's going on. The timer, the clock, the shot clock, everything. It's so... We need the women in charge of the... Can we get a lady president quick?
Yeah. Rory, first of all, I do want to know which of those you like, not which one you think is going to vote in, but also just to, like, the elephant in the room here, as Connor's already mentioned, switching to either of these doesn't mean that anyone other than Kerry, yep, Dublin, possibly Mayo or Donegal or Tyrone are going to win the next 5, 6, 10, 20 All-Irelands. Like, there does seem to be strata in Gaelic football here. And, you know, it's not rearranging the deck chairs because it is improving the competition for all, but it isn't going to change the outcome, let's be honest.
Yeah. And I think, in fairness, Connor, excuse me, Connor hit the nail on the head. The provincial championship argument is a ruse, really, for what's a much more broader, complex and layered and difficult problem that the GAA is going to have to solve at some point, which is a sort of a runaway train of elite at the top and then pretty much a big clump of teams, we'll say, kind of in the middle, and then you have a few stragglers at the back end. And that's probably going to get worse. I mean, the CSO predictions will have 50% of the country's population living on the eastern seaboard by 2040, which is only 19 years away, which is not a long time in the greater scheme of things. So between Dublin, Louth, Wicklow, Meath and Kildare, you're going to have 50% of the entire country's population living within that small little space. I mean, is that then realistic to have a situation where, for instance, in Dublin, you only have one team, where you're not pooling your finances? I mean, you have a situation where Leitrim are trying to compete with Mayo. What's Leitrim's annual budget for their first team, Dizzy? Would it be 150,000? Would it be two?
Yeah. That's what you're talking like.
Yeah. So Leitrim are working off a budget of about 150K, and you've got, they're playing Mayo, who are probably working off a budget of about 600,000 or 700,000.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, we have set up the competition in such a way that It has created a sort of a kill or be killed mentality where you have to fend for yourself. And if you don't, you're going to be left behind. Then that has created huge disparities because there are teams that are able to, there are counties that are able to fundraise independently of what their traditional revenue streams may be. able to then get a leap ahead because they can provide their players with different types of supports and strength and conditioning programs and gym memberships and all of these types of things. The problem is so multi-layered at this point.
Yeah.
And the gap at the top going right down, even I would say to the next bunch, is so, so wide. That what you said, Mikey, is spot on. Like, we'll move the provincial championships here. We'll bring in a league system there. Oh no, we're just going to move this county there. That's deck chairs on the Titanic. This is a far deeper problem. What the GAA should be doing, in my view, is it should be a strategic review on where they see this organization and this association in 20 and 25 years' time. Because if it keeps going the way it's going now, I mean, as Desi said, like, where does that leave football in place in those footballing heartlands in the Midlands or in some of those weaker counties? I mean, they're talking about shifting, we'll say, for instance, one of the proposals, they're talking about shifting counties from Ulster into Connacht, right? Now, as things stand, Cavan are the lowest ranked team in Ulster. So they'd probably be the team that would be expected to go into Connacht. Cavan have won the most Ulster titles. They have 40 Ulster titles and are the current Ulster champions, actually, until a couple of weeks' time. So how are they going to square that one? That, to me, has absolutely no chance. I think the proposal B has some semblance of a chance, but there's huge flaws in that as well. And I don't necessarily think, you know, a situation where a team winning Division 3 or Division 4 is getting into Call Ireland quarterfinals while somebody in Division 1 might have finished 5th or 6th is out of the championship. It's, so, like, I don't know.
Yeah, this is a fair point you make, Rory. And I think there's, Connor, there's an effort by the GAA here to please all. And to there's a very large cohort of people out there. It could be more than half of the GAA family or whatever you want to call it, who are deeply, deeply opposed to taking on the lessons and the good lessons of hurling that you need to be tiered. There's no point in the Longford hurlers playing Kilkenny in an open draw. Anyone now would think that is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the point where the gap has become such, and Sunday, the fact that it was televised because it was only two games on that day. Games like that.
It also was a provincial semi-final. Let's not belittle
what does that even, yeah. So Connor, senior, intermediate, junior, is that the obvious thing here? Is that the most obvious solution? It might be painful to begin
with.
We're
always going to have anomalies though on teams that are, you know, capable of more, who suddenly find themselves walled off in the sort of lower competition.
Okay, it takes them three years to win an All-Ireland instead of 1 year then.
Look, the Cavan example there, I think, is a good idea as to why the GAA are so hesitant to change anything, because there is a host of middle-ranked counties there who have no notion of winning an All-Ireland, or, you know, realistically, they are highly unlikely to get to that point, unless they, Monaghan obviously got close 3 years ago. But they do have an achievable shot at provincial silverware, which does mean something. And so if you shifted to a kind of a tier championship without the carrot of a provincial bauble there, you're basically, I don't know how you're going to solve the problem of apathy within middle rank counties by removing their only sort of realistic means of achieving championship silverware.
Yeah.
Like, I know Desi was saying earlier, the league is where it's at, and maybe that is where it's at. And maybe, you know, we're seeing teams going full tilt at the league and then going off to America for the championship. Desi, so if that has already happened, then fair enough. But there are counties like Roscommon, there are counties like Cavan, there are counties like Monaghan, who essentially, I would say, live for, you know, scooping the odd.
But Mikey, the one thing, I mean, I think we just need to be a small bit mindful of this as well. You have to bear in mind that everything is about context. The GAA is very strategically and very cleverly. They haven't put this special Congress on this week, which I'm sure would have a very different outcome in terms of votes. They've put it on in September. So this special Congress could be taking place 2 weeks after Kerry and Dublin play out an absolute barnstormer in Croke Park. May even go to a replay. Who knows, right? I'm not sure. We had a great championship, didn't we? When Kerry and Dublin, what a final we had. And all of a sudden then, you know, the framing and these 20-point beatings, which we're seeing year after year after year, should they all be forgotten about? Because we all live in a sort of an age of recency bias anyway. So yeah.
I get your point, and it is very, like, you can set Desi, you could kind of, you know, you could set your uh your calendar by the columns in GAA pages of the newspaper and by the conversations that are had, you know, it'll be player burnout in January and February when the colleges come back and play their tournaments, and in October and November it's the club and, well, where does the club sit? And yeah, and now this time of year, or maybe a bit earlier in a regular season, it is the provincial rows, and you know, we do, we kind of joke about it, but you can kind of predict what the rows are going to be.
It's usually hurling refereeing around the start of the league.
That's true. So yeah. but it does seem like even the GAA are listening, and Rory is cynical about their timing of this, etc.
They have form. They do. Like the GAA, like they can manipulate situations. And like, it's so multi-layered, it's incredible, because you have so many stumbling blocks, you have so many vested interests, you have the provincial councils, you have the count. Like, why are the counties themselves not standing up and banging the drum that we're not being treated fairly and all this? You don't hear much of it because there's funding on the way down the tracks, and that's what keeps them going and keeps the blood, you know, like the whole thing going. But like the players, the GP, I don't understand. Like, if you're, the advantage of being a Westmead footballer, I probably played in all the divisions 3 times. So I have a good idea of what it's like being 1, 2, 3, and 4. Like, division 3 and 4, the referees are starting out, learning their trade. Small crowd, small attendance.
So useless is what you're saying.
yeah, correct. Small attendances, poor referees, no atmosphere, no media preview in the papers on the Saturday. No Marty Morrissey, Micheál Omar-Hertig walking into the dressing room after. You know, people, you know, like, you like to see a bit of, you know, pizzazz. Media. Yeah, absolutely. Then you go up to divisions. Friday, there's previews. Saturday's papers, previews, articles. You're
live TV coverage.
You have live TV coverage. You have team holidays at the end of the year. You have a great chance for All-Stars. You have a great chance to get some endorsements, some cars, some, you know, launches of different things. Being a county footballer in Division 1 and 2 is totally worlds apart from 3 and 4. The Leitrims of this world are the real heroes of the GAA. How to keep training year after year for absolutely nothing is incredible. But I think now the players have kind of said, hold on, enough is enough.
Enough of this.
Enough of enough. Like, it's just not working out. We've tried it for long enough. It's getting ridiculous. We're literally doing it for absolutely no reason whatsoever. And you know what? The club is way more enjoyable. There's less pressure. I'm bailing. I'm getting out of here. For some of the younger, this is the reality now, lads. And I'm going to call it. For some of the younger members that get involved and want to play for the county, they'll get involved for a couple of years. They'll get a grant at the end of the year, and they get a little bit of mileage to sustain them for a few years. But that's unsustainable. And that's where it's at some of these counties right now.
Yeah.
Is the problem there not more fundamental than structures? I mean, is the solution to that just not make Leitrim play Mayo?
But what I'm saying is, like, the GPA is a player's representative body for all these, meant to be treating everyone the same, treating them equally. Should they not be banging the drum? Should people not be doing more for the counties like 3 and 4? Obviously, they don't do it for themselves because we don't hear many people complaining. But, like, it's just not good enough.
The problem with the GPA, though, Desi, is if the GPA say black, But Congress will say white. So what the GPA need to do is say we want no change, and Congress and Congress will vote through a raft of changes.
But Rory, the GPA initially, remember the GPA were established. You were like, oh, this is edgy. This is going to happen. This is going to revolutionize. There's a strike coming. Wait and you see. The mileage isn't good enough. And all of a sudden, they're in under the wing of the GAA, and it's like, never hear a dicky bird out of the GPA anymore.
They're kind of more of a welfare body now than a union, really, isn't it?
Well, exactly. The edge has gone off them anyway, that's for certain, because in terms of representing the players, in terms of having constructive initiatives going forward for these teams, like, I do feel Division 3 and 4 players are not being well served at all in the GAA.
Okay. Connor, is there a solution, or is there an explanation for why, you know, Clare 92, Leitrim 94, you know,
Westmead, come on.
Leinster used to be the purest of provinces, Desi. It wasn't even unusual. Everyone got a chance to win it, basically. Everyone should have won it nearly.
Come on, give it to me, will you?
I know. But, you know, we did have Cavan and Tipperary last year, Connor, but it seemed more like, you know, that's going to be having asterisks next to it because
the game was more amateur and ad hoc back then. It wasn't as professionalized. I think the professionalized era has allowed the counties with resources, playing resources primarily. I mean, that's the main issue, I would say.
Yep.
Financial resources then, it has allowed them to essentially, you know, pull away in to the degree that, no, it's not really a viable sporting contest, a lot of these games. Whereas, like, in 1994, Leitrim could aspire to beat Mayo in an off year. You know, it was a more romantic sort of Corinthian era when you could just turn up and have a cut. Now, there are extraordinary stories in club with Mulniacta, famously. I mean, they have practically no pick, smallest club in Longford, and they're winning Leinster. But I come back, I think the issue primarily is the gap that's developed because of that. And you do have to ask the fundamental question, is there a structure? What structure would give Leitrim what they want? Is what I'm wondering. I mean, is there a structure? What Leitrim really need is more people. I mean,
the US professional sports structure is probably what we need.
The county is too small to really to compete in this era.
But even on that, I think that's an interesting point as well there, Connor. I think ultimately this is a nettle the GAA will be slow to grasp. It's a big problem. Like, I mean, we know the arguments around Dublin and the power that Dublin has. And obviously, now that may be coming to an end because, you know, we have the upstarts in Kerry who will probably come on and dominate for another 10 years. But like, this is a major fundamental question. The GAA dodged it to a certain extent because they were kind of, you know, let's hold off, let's wait and see. This might be just one particular era. Is it really sustainable with 2 million people and you have one team? Like, is that a sustainable, viable situation for the GAA long term, whereby you have however many clubs there are in Dublin, tens of thousands of players, and only one avenue to play at the highest level? I mean, that really is, and that's a problem that's going to get worse. You know, all you have to do is drive around Dublin. I live up here, Mikey, you do as well. You see, they just keep building houses. There's more and more people coming from rural areas. Now, maybe COVID might slow that down a little bit, but I don't think it's going to slow it down enough to not be a much more fundamental issue. And it's a very fair point from Connor's perspective. There probably is no structure out there that's going to really give Leitrim, a county like Leitrim, the ability to compete. But I definitely think tiering it in some way, shape or form would at least give them the attainable goal of maybe winning a game or two. I think that would be that's as much as they could hope for.
Here, wasn't there the plan was to run off the provincial championships though, so they could still have their shot at that theoretically, and then go into the lower tier based off their league performance.
Yeah.
So what we have here, Desi, is a bunch of counties with no hope, tied to the tradition of the competitions they play in, and tied to the county they're born in, and
there isn't really
you can change the competitions, but the luck of being born somewhere remains. And outside of professionalism and transfers and drafts, which is obviously not going to happen in any of our lifetimes,
it probably will get to the point where players will have the opportunity of playing with their county, but maybe deciding to get a job up in Dublin or something like that to think they're good enough to play for them and declare for Dublin. Because I do feel it's going to get to the stage where playing for certain counties, there's no glamour to that at all. And if you were a young person looking at, and you had ambitions, and you're in a county that's a weaker county, so-called weaker county, and if you're serious about what you're trying to do, or serious about what you're trying to achieve, you could just leave the county, go to college in Galway, get a job in Galway, declare for Galway. Like, and it's a sad situation, sad to turn your back on your county, but if you want to be ambitious, This is the options that people might go with. Like, and I wouldn't blame them either. But because, like, why should you be tied to a county that's not going to win anything ever?
Mm. Yeah,
it's a fair question, I think. Like,
yeah,
like my young lad.
What was the players' position on the tier championship a few years ago? I think they were heavily opposed to it, in particular players from the weaker counties at the time.
Yeah.
Well, you see, I think, Connor, isn't that what we're saying? Evolved. Is that I think that, like, 10 years ago, the chance, like, even look at Cavan Tipperary, like you said it, and you're correct. They won it last year. They reached the ultimate in their eyes was the provincial title. You see Mickey Graham now and David Power trying to motivate his players this year. He can't do anything because what? They've achieved all they wanted to achieve because they're no
realistic. Lifetime goal.
It was the same in Westmead. We won our provincial and Paulie O'Shea was trying to chase us all around Westmead, trying to find us out pubs and all these places to go play during the quarterfinal. We said we've won everything we wanted to win. And it is very difficult. But at the same time, lads, it has to be radical action. Like what we've seen, like that was coming. And I knew that was coming during the week of the game against Mayo, Leitrim Mayo. That was coming. The word on the street was that was on the cards. And it will be on the cards for more counties in the next couple of years if we don't. Because I like, Rory, you were down there. Like in terms of the culture, Mayo have it. Like there's just one thing on Mayo, like the culture.
But, just even on that, Desi, right? And this is a question that I was asking just to see if our panel would be interested. Was it actually dangerous for the Leitrim players? Was it dangerous to be on the field? Just in terms of the body shape, the hits.
No, yeah.
It's, you know, like if you had a slight lad, who might be...
Yeah,
you know,
totally underdeveloped, yeah.
10 or 11 stone with no muscle mass, who might have been... And some of those Leitrim lads were quite light. Yeah. If they got caught full steam with a side-to-side from Paddy Durkin... 100%, you know.
Yeah, no, to be honest, Rory,
you could break about six bones in the other.
Yeah, there is an argument for that. I went down to the pitch after I was chatting Kieran MacDonald and I was just blown away. There was, for about 30, 40 minutes, there was three groups of players. The players that had reached their quota in terms of the work rate effort, they were stretching. Another group that hadn't hit their targets for their GPS were out in the middle of the pitch running. A lot of the extended panel were doing extra long runs. So there was three groups of players. But the sheer physicality, the size, they were so lean, so muscular. And the culture that was adopted in Mayo to, let's say as well now, this was, we rumoured 12 players not involved, give or take. Killian O'Connor, Lee Keegan, not involved. So this was a fringe panel to a certain degree. And this is the level of intensity training after an inter-county provincial semi-final. This is what was going on. And this is... And I've heard about Mayo during the league. They go play down. The match should be on. Next minute, A versus B, 15 on 15, is after the match somewhere else. And James Horan is watching that. And he's watching all of his players all of the time. He's developing about 40 to 45 players. They're getting extremely well looked after. First rate, everything. The gear to have, everything is magnificent. And if I was a Mayo young person, I would aspire... Genuinely, I think it would be the greatest thing I could do is be a Mayo County footballer, but that is not the same in a lot of counties.
So, Conor, what we have, we want this. We want the Mayo footballers to be the supreme athletes that Desi has just described, and we want to see them come up against Dublin, and we want to see them come up against Kerry, and we want to see them come up against Donegal and Tyrone, and throw in a few more counties there to give yourself enough for a championship. To me, I know it's not easy, but it does seem that allowing the best teams to play each other as often as possible and allowing the next most evenly matched teams to play each other as often as possible. I'm describing the National League here, but is that what should be the ultimate competition? It's been said for years, like, the best competition is the league. Why not flip them and have the provincial championships as your, you know, have your...
I think the provincial championships would possibly, but I think detaching them from the All-Ireland championship would rob them of a significant amount of grandeur, I think.
Desi and Westmeath, and not to Cavan and Tipperary.
I think they wanted to win. Over time, they would sap them of that degree of grandeur. I think if you push them up to the start of the year, if we're going to go down that route, and it logically possibly we should go down that route. I don't think there's a way of maintaining the luster of the provincial championship on the level it's on now if you put it on a different time of the year. Completely detached from the All-Ireland Championship. I don't see that. You can't keep everyone happy there. I mean, the provincial councils are going to be put out if you go to a full league system, and that's the way it is. They're not going to maintain their luster earlier in the year.
Yeah, okay. Didn't think we were going to solve this, lads, and you'll be shocked to hear.
Yeah, but one last point, though, Mikey. There's a notion out there, and I have seen it expressed, that tears are in some way to be feared. You know, tears for fears. There we go. But
it's a t-shirt.
Yeah, so but that the tears don't work, and that when you're kind of jettisoned into sort of Talchin cups or Christie rings and that you're all of a sudden you're forgotten about. But they're forgotten about largely anyway. You know, I don't really buy that, and I would hazard a strong guess, for instance, looking at a competition like the Joe McDonagh, which is a fabulous competition, which I'm sure, Desi, you'll probably be watching with keen interest on Saturday, because I think Westmead have a very good chance of winning that and then getting back up to Liam McCarthy. And that would be a big shot in the arm for hurling. Okay, Antrim won it last year and are straight back down. That's a bit of a blow, but they just have to get back on the horse and get back up again. That's how it works.
And they had a good season. It was a memorable season.
Yeah,
for Antrim early.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I think is important, which I saw Jamie Wall make the point on social media on Sunday night after I got home, was we have a tendency within the GAA of this one up, one down, which makes it very much all or nothing then, because there's only one place to get up and one place to get down. I think if they are looking at to bring in tiers, which I think is ultimately going to have to happen at some point anyway, you need to just be a little bit more flexible, that it might be either two teams up and down or three teams up and down, whatever, you know. So it's not such a all or nothing end to the season. You play a final, you don't make it, your season's a complete failure. You know, promotion should be slightly more fluid, which would give teams a better chance maybe of staying in the divisions that they progress up to, and give them a better chance of getting out of the ones that they get demoted down to as well.
Okay. So you should learn from association football.
Leisure, possibly the best example, their performance in the 2019 All-Ireland Hurling Championship.
There you go, and they've survived again, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. After slamming the provincial championships for half an hour, Desi, let's just mention quickly the Ulster football semi-finals. Armagh and Monaghan on Saturday afternoon in Newry.
Yeah.
Armagh, there's a team. Gosh, we'd all like to see them win an Ulster title, and they might disappear before an All-Ireland semi as well.
Kieran McGeaney, I think, what was he, 6 or 7 years was he Kildare? Didn't win any silverware. With Armagh, started off, struggled for a few years to win a match in Ulster. I really like him. You know, I'm a fan of Kieran McGeaney. I think he's done great things with the counties. It's steady progress all the time. But now they're moving in the right direction, that they really are going to be forced in the next couple of years. He's developing a lot of very good young players. They have had a tendency to go missing for large portions of matches, like where they're doing really good football for 10 minutes and then they go off the face of the earth for another 10. Monaghan with Banty, sure, that's a story in itself. Like, that'll be a lively game. It'll be a great game. And Kieran Donaghy is in there as well. And I just felt with that, the Kieran Donaghy, Kieran McKeever, Kieran McGeaney, I just felt it sounded like a really interesting management team. And I do feel that, you know, depending on Conor McManus and that dead leg, I just fancy Armagh to win.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting there. Sorry, Mikey, you mentioned Conor McManus. Just a quick story there. So I was just doing a bit of work there this morning before we began the podcast. Next thing I look at my phone is ringing. It's Conor McManus. So I was like, geez, week of a championship match. It's a rare enough occurrence for an intercounty footballer to be ringing someone in the media, but just, you know,
telling you his availability.
Yeah, right. So I answered the phone anyway, and Conor, Rory, Conor McManus here, how are you? And I was like, oh, grand Conor, how are you? And he said, I'm just, you know, that house there that's for sale, you know, it should be good to go. I'm just talking to the solicitor today. And so I was like, I'd say you've the wrong Rory. he looked at his phone and we got a good giggle, so we had a bit of a chat. And they're all set for Saturday anyway.
And are you buying the house?
Yeah. I'm not buying the house.
Broadcastable, isn't it?
Yeah. What about yourself, Rory? Monaghan Monaghan. There was the stories of their demise have been a little bit exaggerated, and there's definitely a kick there. A lot of fresh blood to go with the old blood, and as you say, but a lot does hinge on McManus and that leg, and whether he sells that house or not.
They have a few more strings to their bow up front now. The form of McCarthy, McCarron is definitely giving them more depth and a bit more attacking potential. But I think the big thing for me over the last couple of weeks was that sort of last gasp snatch, smash and grab versus Galway in the league to maintain their Division 1 status, which I think they jealously guard. And fairness to them, they really have done a fantastic job since going into Division 1. I don't know, was it 8 years ago?
Yeah.
So I think the momentum that they've gotten from that, I think, is would probably have added a really good spring to their step. I'd say training has been good crack over the last few weeks. I think Banty will feel the defeat to Cavan will really last year when, you know, I think that will stick in his craw a big in a big way, because if you look at Cavan's run in the Ulster Championship afterwards, like Monaghan would have fancied their chances there. I mean, Down was it was Down and. Who else? Was it Down in Antrim after that? Which I think, you know, was a major opportunity missed from Banty's perspective. He's never won an Ulster title. They'll be putting a huge emphasis on this. Himself and Kieran McGeaney are old pals. I think it's going to be... I can't wait. I'm just really, really looking forward to this game on Saturday. The two Ulster semi-finals are going to be fantastic. And this one really, really hard to call. But I just think Monaghan just about. I just think they have a little bit more experience. And I think that might stand to them.
The other one, Connor, is probably the game of the championship thus far, dare we say. The championship we've been sagging off. But... you know, Donegal.
Ulster Championships, they're brilliant.
Yeah, it is. It is. The Ulster Championship is nearly every, well, a lot of the games thus far have been watchable. Donegal Tyrone in Enniskillen, neutral ground. The questionable Donegal defence against the resurgent Tyrone attack is the easy way to sell this, which is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Donegal did well to pull it out of the fire. There's a sense that. They're a slightly frustrating team, given that they haven't somehow reached an All-Ireland semi-final, despite being, you know, pegged as All-Ireland contenders for a while. And even last year, they were in the wake of Cork's smash and grab in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. They were pegged for a while as the only hope to stop Dublin. And then, of course, we know what happened in the Ulster final, and that was that then. So in that sense, they're quite hard to trust. Now, Tyrone are in a state of transition, obviously, under new management after Mickey Hart leaving for however long he was there, 25 years or whatever. But in the league, they were good in spots, but that sort of result against Kerry, that eye-popping scoreline, maybe it has to be seen in context. We saw what happened to Galway. They don't seem too scared by it. You know, they got through Roscommon and now they have a tilt at the Connacht Championship. So... It's hard to read on that basis. I mean, this game, it's pretty hard to call. I would slightly inch towards Donegal just on the basis that the management team is more settled, the team looks more settled, and so they probably know what they're about a bit more than Tyrone at this stage.
Yeah. It's funny, Desi, that like I know we're going back 10 years basically to the last great Donegal team, but you know, they're absolutely built on a miserly defense. And that's how they won games. And now Donegal supporters, Jesus, we've 8 forwards would probably make 90% of the teams in the country, but it's at the other end of the field where we can't seem to get things completely right. It's, you know, you can't have it all.
No, I suppose Neil McGee is knocking on a little bit now as well. Like, and I suppose if you think of some of their defenders are naturally attacking, they're blistering pace like when they're going, but then, and physically they're not the biggest of defenders either. Like, so they will come up against it. I think it's crucial that game how the Ronan McNamee thing goes. I felt it was harsh, to be honest. I know you could say he was raising the fist and it was a push there, all of that, but to be honest, the rough and tumble of Intercounty Championship, it was very unlucky to get sent off. And if he's not playing, he's a massive player in that full back line. I do think the timing of Cathal McShane, he got some game time last weekend as well. I think that's crucial, because if he's inside, he can cause all sorts of trouble. He's a match winner in himself, to be honest.
Himself and McCurry together is an interesting combination.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think that's what Tyrone really were missing throughout the league. And fairness to Brian Dewar, Fergal Logan. Like, Brian Dewar is, I know him, I played with him. But he's a very popular character in Tyrone. And I do think what he's trying to do is the right thing. But it's so difficult to change a game plan. It does look as if the Tyrone players are struggling at that. But the motivation in terms of Tyrone, when it comes to championship, they generally dig out very good results. As opposed to, like, Declan Bonner probably got away with one last weekend.
Yeah. Rory, it's the first game on TV on Sunday. How do you see it?
Yeah, big one. Looking forward. Can't wait for the cider. I think it'll... Yeah, I think this is as hard to call now as any game in the championship so far. Both were impressive.
That's not a big statement.
Yeah, that's probably not. Yeah, it's not really. But I think both were impressive in both were impressive in different ways last weekend. I think Tyrone, you know, like they just did what they really needed to do. I don't know, have they found someone in midfield in this guy Fitzpatrick? That might have definitely bolstered their options around there. They probably were a little weak on that in that area. I think that'll definitely give them more ball-winning options around the middle of the field if Morgan decides to go along. Kickoff strategy is going to be really interesting for both keepers, two of the top keepers as well, really impacting Morgan. Hard to call. I just have a sneaky feeling for Tyrone. I think the trimming they got down in Killarney wasn't really a fair reflection. It probably did set them back a little bit and probably opened their eyes a small bit to the real challenge of playing now at this highest level. And I think they kind of knuckled down ever since. So we saw a good start to that last weekend. Give them a hesitant nod. But again, I wouldn't be surprised to see extra time in this one.
Okay, we have Leinster semi-finals as well. Not going to dwell on them. Sorry, I'm not going to be a complete hypocrite here and give out about the provincial championships and then meaningfully to do previews of the of the Leinster championship. But Desi, a terrible league for Westmeath, but they're one win away.
A bit harsh now. Come on, we lost by Meath by a point in injury time. Mayo was an unbelievable performance. And after that, I might have went a bit pear-shaped, but very lucky.
Okay. We're the better team against Cork, I would suggest.
Okay. Massive score. We sort of scored 25 points against Cork. Yeah, incredible stuff. Westmeath have some... Hey, we're playing Kildare. It's the provincial semi-final.
You didn't let me finish my sentence.
We're nearly guaranteed to win this.
I was trying to big you up, and you didn't even let me get there. Yeah. Right. Have you had your lunch yet? That was really So, one win away from a provincial... final was what I was going to say. This
is a terrible league.
Okay, on paper.
Okay, look it. We're playing Kildare. I'll repeat myself. We're playing Kildare. They haven't won a provincial semi-final in 7 years. I will say one thing about Kildare. I was impressed with them against Mead. The ground out result in Newbridge. Tough pitch. It's very small. But you know when Jack O'Connor was appointed, you said to yourself, right. That is exactly the man that Kildare need. Because yeah, what he brings, like if it was a normal Kildare team, you'd say, they won't have that doggedness, that toughness that you need. And that's what Jack O'Connor has in spades. And he'll instill that in his players. There'll be a mental toughness in them, which obviously Kildare have struggled. And it's not rocket science to say that. Like it is true. Kildare really do struggle to live up to their potential. They should be competing with Dublin. They're a massive county, but for whatever reason, in terms maybe of quality...
It's a hurling county now, Desi.
It's a hurling county now. But I do think Kildare slight favourites, but I do think when you have John Heslin in the team, you have Ger Egan in the team, you have James Dolan, you have Dennis Groon, we have quality players all over the place. I wouldn't be one bit surprised to see Westmeath win that game.
Oh, that'll set the championship alight for a couple of weeks at least, because I think... Look, I've just mentioned Dublin are playing Meath in the other semi-final for people.
The only interesting thing that will probably come out of that is we should get closure on you know who and whether or not he's going to appear this year.
Eric Lowndes leaving the panel this morning.
Really?
So you have Jack McCaffrey, Paul Mannion, Eric Lowndes, Stephen Cluxton, all from last year gone.
Darren Daly, Keane O'Sullivan.
Starting to wonder.
Is Kevin McManaman gone as well? Is he gone with the Irish team Olympics? I definitely think. I mean, I saw Kieran Whelan writing in the Herald last week there about it being a rebuild job, and it probably is. Now look, they have so much raw materials to work with. Like it's something that you could achieve, and he still has his main linchpins in. The likes of Fenton, Kilkenny and Conn O'Callaghan. They're the three leaders now and they're three incredible pillars to build your team around. So I wouldn't be...
Down to bare bones.
I wouldn't be worrying about Dublin all that much, but I definitely think there is the chasing pack of one at the minute will definitely smell a little bit of blood now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll look forward to well, I was going to say we're going to look forward to that game, but
needs to win. I'd say
that's a ballsy call right there.
Bathing in the extremely long grass.
Yeah. My God. If they do win, this clip will go viral. It'll just be Connor appearing like a sage and sport for
business. They demolished Longford the last day, which isn't easily done, you know.
Oh, that's true enough. All right. I think we've tried to fix football for long enough. We'll leave it at that. Desi, thank you very much for your time.
No problem.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
Thank you very much for staying with us after the football championship structure discussion. Glad to say that Brendan Cummins has joined us to talk about some hurling action coming up at the weekend. And what a weekend of hurling it is, Brendan.
Yeah, it is. Look, it was the group of death, we'll call it. And on Saturday morning or Monday morning, I was that soldier 1 year in 2013. I sat in the dressing room. We trained early and I came in and I listened to the draw. Tipperary played Dublin or Kilkenny in the qualifiers. And then I was above in Galway.
In 13, we
went up and we watched the Tip footballers on that Saturday night. And the guy on the public address above in Salt Hill took great glee in saying Kilkenny had been beaten, Dublin now qualify. And I was going, oh no, we're going to Nolan Park to play Kilkenny next weekend. And, you know, so such is the qualifiers. 1 minute you think that you might have an opportunity to get back on the road again. And then it throws up a draw like you see Clare and Wexford. And if there was a term of rats in a barrel, this is it now for these two teams, because we know there's no love lost. We know the two of them have had massive performances throughout the championship so far, even though they didn't get across the line. So they know it's in them. And unfortunately, one will fall by, what, half three, quarter to four on Saturday. So it's all to play for. But it's what we want as hurling people, to see these kind of games. And I know the players themselves will have a real edge to this one now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I asked you an open-ended question. There's a great weekend of hurling. And you went straight to the Clare Wexford. We've got two provincial finals on. You got the Joe McDonough final, which obviously is important to the teams involved. And but it's this qualifier between Wexford and Clare. Connor, this is the rivalry that has captured the imagination in modern day hurling. And all we really need is for James Owens to be operating Hawkeye in Semple Stadium and Brian Lowen's Leaving Cert nightmare will have come to fruition.
Well, that would be highly illegal, I'm sure. I mean, I'm not sure what the county status is Hawkeye operators. That must be tightly managed. It really is, given Davy's history with Clare. Obviously, since he's gone to Wexford, they've met a few times now. This is, I think, the third meeting in the championship. And Davy, obviously, he's yet to win in the championship. No, he did get a win in the league, the very controversial league match they played earlier in the year. He seems to have an issue with Clare, because the two championship games they played were both in Davy's down years. Under Davy, Wexford seemed to have alternated between progressive years when they looked really good and were flourishing and everything was buzzing, and then oddly flat years like 2018 and especially 2020. So it looks like they're more tuned in this year. They played pretty well against Laois, I thought. Now, you could argue, you know, Laois were poor on the day. They did rouse themselves for that game against Antrim last weekend. But I still thought Wexford were very slick. Their movement was extremely good. Chin was playing he drifted into full forward at times. There were these odd, there was an all singing, all dancing quality to their forward line. Conor McDonald was very good as well. And they should really have beaten Kilkenny. I mean, they had Kilkenny nearly beaten, but you know what Kilkenny like. So it's two teams with quite high on confidence, I would say, given where they're at. On confidence as you could be in the first round of the qualifiers, I would say.
That's a good point, actually, Roy, that, you know, often the first round of the qualifiers, you've teams who are kind of trying to rouse themselves, and like it looks like, you know, you're back at base camp and it's a long way up. But you do actually have two teams here who have put in very good performances. Clare against Waterford, Wexford against Laois, which kind of counts, but maybe not so much. But in defeat to Kilkenny, they were exceptional. And if James Owens had been the Hawkeye operator in Croke Park, they probably would have won.
I would go as far as to say I would probably agree with Davey in that I felt maybe Wexford were the better team over the first 70. Over the course of the full 70 minutes, I thought Wexford Just they gave it everything. They poured everything into it, and they were unlucky, really, not to win it in normal time, obviously, with the big decision at the end, which Fergal Horgan got correct. And Fergal Horgan is refereeing this game on Saturday in Semple Stadium. And I think, once again, he will facilitate what I think will be a really good contest. I just have a fancy for Clare. I think they would have found it a little bit easier to lift themselves after the defeat. I think there'll be a bit of crankiness over the way they lost the game to Tipperary, and I think they'll hopefully use that from their point of view in a positive way. Whereas I think Wexford will probably feel they left the Leinster Championship after them. And I think it might be just that bit more difficult for Davy to lift Wexford facing into this. Plus the venue, I think, will play in Clare's advantage. I don't think I've ever seen Wexford. Now, I know they don't play there that often, which again is a disadvantage in its own right. But Clare's familiarity, I mean, look, I was down there.
So make me relive the 93 league final saga, yeah. Please.
But even as recently as a quarter final against Limerick a couple of years ago, Wexford took an awful trimming when there was a lot of expected of them going into it. The game again was played in Thurles. Like Thurles is, look, it's perfect for a hurler. It shouldn't make any difference. But I do think Clare will be more familiar with it. And I just fancy them really just with a tight nod.
Brendan, we could talk about a lot of matchups, but we don't realistically have time. So my one question for you is, if you're Davy Fitzgerald, what do you do with Tony Kelly?
I think you pretty much tried to do what Tip did, in that you swarm the middle third of the pitch and try to stop the ball from going in as best you can. You do have a man marker on him when he's inside your 45. I think then you hand him over to the wing back out the pitch to follow him. But you remember Wexford would play with a sweeper, so it would allow everybody to mark their man around there. I think you'll find Tony Kelly being pushed out to the wings an awful lot to get possession, is what Davy will try to do. If he does get it, make sure he gets it facing each stand and make him do a worldie every time, you know. So I think the way that Wexford play will suit the marking technique you need with Tony Kelly. And of course, up the other end, you have Lee Chin, and I wonder what Clare are going to do with him if they go toe-to-toe. He'd probably go on John Conlon, stand maybe 20 yards up the pitch from him, and they'll try to play through Lee Chin and try to get John Conlon out the pitch. So that's the tactic side of it. But when you take the tactics into account, yes, it will have something to do with it. But who keeps their emotions in check the best for me will be the ones that'll win. Because obviously both managers will take the paint off the walls. You'll go out and you don't want to give a rash slap anywhere along the line here. Hit a ball too high because of too much adrenaline. You make a mistake because you got too carried away. I think whoever keeps the head on this one jumps the fence.
All right. I will just remind everyone, I probably mentioned a couple of times, that Wexford did beat Clare in the league, despite Lee Chin having one of the worst performances I've ever seen from an inter-county free-taker in my life. He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Mm. So perhaps Davy has managed to figure out his matchups here, but it's hard to get away from the... We'll move off this game in a second, Connor, but, you know, men like yourself who like to write colourful pieces about the GAA, you know, Lowen and Davy is kind of manna from heaven. It's, you know, former allies now pitted against each other, you know, over something that happened when they managed teams they no longer manage. It's like, and neither of them are going to let it go. You can see that the animus is real and it's lasting.
The staying power of the dispute and the bitterness of it and the open hostility is remarkable to see. Now, Davy did sort of, I think, offer some sort of branch on the Sunday game last year where he said he wished Brian well and Clare well. But, you know, the tension has broken out again following the league meeting and the controversy around close contacts and so forth. It adds a major spice to the occasion, there's no doubt. And you know, it would otherwise, last year's championship meeting in Port Leash, it would have been hard to add much spice to that occasion otherwise, I would say, given that Wexford were so abject. And all there was to focus on near the end was the sort of various sideline shenanigans and arguments and crowds and so forth. Davy, you would imagine, Fitzgerald, you would imagine, would, I'll call him by his surname just to end the chumminess for a minute. You'd imagine he'd be keen to not to lose three championship games in a row to Clare. Now, Clare obviously have the sort of scent of injustice in their nostrils. They played very well against Tip, obviously. Could have won the game. Who knows how it would have panned out. Wexford, yeah. On balance, I mean, it's extremely hard to call. On balance, I slightly go for Clare, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it tipped the other way this time.
We'll have to wait and see. Wexford are going to win, I believe. The other one, Rory, Laois and Waterford. You can't help but feel there's a sense of after the Lord Mayor's show here, Laois have won the game they needed to win this year and bonus territory. But Waterford have had one game in the Championship and they weren't very good. So should Cheddar Plunkett be limiting his ambitions?
We heard Desi Dolan earlier speak about how Paddy was chasing him around pubs to try and lift him after they had won the Leinster Championship and that they had more or less achieved all that they had needed to achieve in that particular year. And I'd say from Leash's perspective, we've probably seen something similar. They've been missing an awful lot of players. They've managed to preserve their Leinster Championship status, their Liam McCarthy Cup status, and they're in Division 1 again next year. We think they might still have a relegation playoff to play there, but I think from their point of view, I think it's mission accomplished for 2021. And then, like, so look, they're going out and they're going to have a free shot. The problem for them is they're probably going to be facing a Waterford team that was extremely flat the first day out and was very unlike a Liam Cahill type team performance. So I think, unfortunately from Laois's perspective, they could be on the back of a bit of a backlash off the back of that performance and could ship a bit of a trimming on Saturday, unfortunately.
Any explanation from your end, Brendan, why Waterford they just didn't seem themselves. There was no bounce in them. And after the league had been so encouraging, everyone said, geez, they've lost so many players, but they've found a way, you know, they've found new players for the positions. And then they go out in the first round of the Championship and, you know, they're playing like they've got concrete socks on.
Yeah, I think when you're missing Jamie Barron and Prunty, when Barron and Prunty aren't there, like, I mean, you're missing 3, 6, and 8. You're asking Austin to fill a load of holes there. Ira Daly at 6, then you're asking him to do an awful lot more than he had to do even in the All-Ireland final last year with having inexperience behind him again at the 3 positions. So I think all that together, Liam Cahill won't accept excuses knowing the kind of man that Liam is. And he will try to get that anger back into the players. He's had a number of weeks now. I'd say Prunty is surely back by now. The draw is quite good for Waterford in that they get to get their mojo back and they have an extra week's rest on the players that might be injured. Barron, I don't know if we will see him this weekend. I would expect to see him maybe the weekend after. I'd say he'll be okay for round 2 of the qualifiers. So there isn't any major reason other than having the injuries and all that they had. They were very flat. They looked exactly like they did against Kilkenny in last year's All-Ireland semi-final in the first half, doing stuff that's completely uncharacteristic, like hitting the ball 70 yards, 50-50 balls. So I think Liam will have used the video as a great way of beating the players over the head again to say, look, we got to an All-Ireland final last year, did simple things right. Let's get back to that again and show a bit of fight.
Yeah. Just before we move on to the provincial finals, Brendan, just a word on the Joe McDonagh final. You must be delighted to see your former comrades getting back there in unusual circumstances. They lose to Meath in Meath, but the very, very tight margins on the scoring difference and how it was all divided up. And they're in a final against Westmeath, which they must feel slightly more confident about perhaps than they did against Antrim last year. Or is that being unfair on Westmeath?
I think both teams won't be overly happy with the way they're going into the final, to be honest about it. And Kerry had a number of injuries coming in. They took a few clippings during the league to Carlo and to Offaly especially. And being beaten by Meath above in Navan, Meath's not an easy place to go. I think Podge Boyle scored the free from 80 yards to get Kerry actually through. And they looked like they were down and out, 5 points down. And Kildare or Westmeath the same way. They needed the old stages like Mitchell O'Brien, Killian Doyle, and of course they have Davy Glennon with them now to all pull him across the line above against Kildare. Great work being done in Kildare hurling. But you would have expected the Joe McDonagh finalists in Westmeath and Kerry to put away Meath and Kildare in the semi-finals, we'll call it. Do you know what I mean? And not to have as many headaches they did. Now, having said all that, it's a real 50-50 job, to be honest. Kerry are down a number of players from where last year. And Westmeath's confidence seemed to come back a bit from the league. It can't have been easy for Shane and his players above the way that the league had went for them. So look, it is real. It's going to be a real dogfight in Grow Park. It's great to see the Kerry lads back there. Obviously, I have a Grow farm, haven't worked for them for 3 or 4 years previous. And hopefully their experience from last year will be enough to get them across the line. But it's going to be a nail biter, I think, down to on this one on Saturday evening.
Yeah. Connor, nail biter, dog fight. There could be good descriptions of the match that follows the Joe McDonagh final as well, considering how Dublin managed to reach the Leinster final just by absolutely overwhelming Galway in terms of physicality, in terms of just downright doggedness. You can use every hurling cliche you want in the book. But Kilkenny look well up for that kind of game at the moment, because, you know, we mentioned it briefly, you know, Fergal Horgan kind of swallowed his whistle for 90 odd minutes in Croke Park a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, we saw what we got, their game with Wexford. Dublin, they won't outmuscle Kilkenny, I don't think. So they're going to have to do a hell of a lot of hurling here as well.
Dublin's triumph over Galway, I mean, they were terrific defensively, particularly in the second half. I mean, every Galway used the ball quite poorly in terms of, you know, it was kind of making heroes out of the Dublin inside defenders, Liam Rush and co. Dublin, to some degree, their triumph was built on Galway's initial profligacy. Now, they did play it very well, and they worked their goal very well, and they played exceptionally well in the second half. I suspect that, you know, it's very hard to back against Kilkenny in these games. They just have this sort of incredible life force, especially in these games where the ref has, as you say, swallowed the whistle. They kind of take on an almost whirling dervish energy, and it's nearly overwhelming. And you're kind of sitting there wondering how are they able to scrap this manically for so long, so relentlessly. I mean, they possibly should have lost that Leinster semi-final twice. I mean, it looked like they had lost it, then pulled it back. And then obviously there was the Owen Murphy incident. The only time ever when the attacking team didn't want to see Paul appear on the screen. So, you know, Dublin, although they played very surgically and very intelligently against Galway, particularly when they got in front, you know, the traditionalist in me just finds it very hard to back against the Kilkenny life force in these sorts of games. And
if it was any other county other than Kilkenny, you'd almost say, geez, I don't know if they have another performance like that in them. But with a Brian Cody's Kilkenny, you never think that there'll be anything but that kind of level of commitment. If they're beaten in terms of hurling, they'll be beaten in terms of hurling, but they won't be beaten for fight or spirit or for going till the final whistle.
They're incredible. I mean, they really, really are. I mean, I don't know how he does it. It just year after year, even last year, if you look at last year when they got beaten in the All-Ireland semi-final, it took an absolutely, it was like something out of a fairy tale, the way Waterford had to play. No, this is not a vintage Kilkenny team by any means. We've seen a lot stronger, a lot better, a lot more depth in their panels down through the years. But you'll never, ever catch them for fight, for spirit. They will go down, fight, as Gerlach Nan used to say, fighting on their backs. And you literally have to be nailing up the coffin to try and kill them off. Whatever that spirit that they have that Cody often speaks about, Jesus, if you could bottle and sell that, you'd be a wealthy man. And they'll never be found wanting in that regard. And that's why you can never back against them, to be fair. Now, the one thing I would say is, we don't know how Owen O'Donnell is, or do we? Is there talk that he may be out? Like, did he pull up with a bad hamstring in that final? And I would suggest that he would 100% have been earmarked to mark TJ Reid, and he's well able for TJ. If he doesn't play, then I think Dublin are in real trouble, because he's arguably Dublin's best player now, really, you know? So, no, you just can't back against Kilkenny. You just hope for Dublin's sake and for their performances in the rest of the championship, because obviously they're in the last six regardless, is that they don't go out now after and undo all the good work by taking a beating, which they won't, I don't think.
Brendan, are you that down on Dublin's chance? Would you give Dublin a chance here? They have beaten the, you know, the supposed number one contenders to Limerick. So, you know, like, are we giving them no chance here on Saturday evening?
No, I think I think Dublin, the way they set up is extremely good. I think you've Liam Rush and Conor Burke sitting there around the 65 with one alternating, sitting back and the other trying to work at the sixth position. And then, of course, if you've Crummy and Sutcliffe playing in your half-forward line, more often than not, when the ball lands on top of those two big fellas, it sticks like. So the counter-attack isn't something they have to overly worry about. That gives your defence, Rush and all, a chance to get back out the field. And in Boland then and O'Callaghan, they've got pace around Ronan Hayes. So they have a lot of things going for them now, Dublin. The question for me is that when that big bomb drops down on top of the edge of the square and Owen O'Donnell isn't there, what's going to happen? Mm. And my fear is that can he get a couple of goals here and get 5 or 6 points?
Heads drop.
An unbelievable way of managing. Yeah, they have a way of managing a match like Limerick can't cope with in 2019. You with me? So if they can't do it, you know, Dublin will certainly really struggle. So Dublin need to keep in this and win a couple of points, get it down to home straight. And sometimes it's Matty Kenny, you know, you just feel this could be our year. Like, you know, they've had a lot of tragedy within the camp. They've come back very, very strong out of all the adversity that's thrown at them. So they seem to have their heads about them and they seem to have a confidence that nobody else in the country has about them. And sometimes the last thing you say to your players is everyone thinks you're going to get hammered. Go out and prove them wrong. And I'd say that's what Matty Kenny's going to say before they take the field in the Leinster final Saturday night.
Yeah, they'll pin this podcast to the dressing room wall, because I also think that Kilkenny are going to win. I'm beating down Wexford, man. I always think Kilkenny are going to win. So we'll move on, Conor, to the Munster hurling final, which is maybe as a lot of people would have seen it when the draw was made, is All-Ireland champions Limerick against Tipperary. Limerick were, I don't know, can a team get so good like Limerick that they can just be functional and not really impress us a whole lot? But still, it's apparent to us all that they're actually playing almost, not a different game from everybody else, but they're playing the game at a level that they can be unimpressive while being very impressive, if that's fair to them.
Remarkable, they managed to beat Cork by 8 points in a Munster semi-final, and the reaction afterwards was that the whole thing was very sort of ho-hum. You know, I mean, it's a sign of their ascendance, really, if anything. I would assume they'll be favourites this weekend. I mean, it's very hard to say anything new about Tipperary yet. I mean, it's old news that they're old news in terms of their team sheet. You know, it's the same. It's still more or less the same prop that came through years ago that's backboning the team. Tip, their league form, you learn nothing from their league form. Really, that was similar to in 2019. Their league form was similarly undistinguished, and then they exploded into life come championship. So they have certain. I don't think they paid much attention to it, and they were, you know, it's arguable whether they would have beaten Clare anyway, because they were particularly impressive in the second half, even outside of that period where they had the extra man. Now they did tail off near the end, and Clare got it back to 4 points. But I would suspect that, you know, Limerick's game appears more honed. Very little seems to have changed since the last time the teams played. I would probably go for Limerick.
Yeah. Rory, it does seem like Conor's kind of summed it up quite well there. I think that we kind of know what to expect from both teams. And Brendan might object. So if we get what we expect from both teams, Limerick will win, is kind of how I would see it.
Well, the problem for everybody else is we certainly know what we're going to get from Limerick. 100, like, but no one can do anything about it, you know? Like, there's no mystery with what Limerick do at this stage. I think it's pretty obvious, you know, the deep line half forwards, the crowd around the middle, they make it a war zone, they beat you up physically, they take their scores when they get them, they win the match pulling up, and that's kind of what, you know, like, they don't even have to play that well to swat some of these teams away at this stage, and I don't actually think they played particularly well against Cork the last time around, and still won pulling up. So look, I think you're going to know what you're going to get from Limerick. I think from, as Conor said, makes a good point. Like, have Tipperary brought anything new or different to the table that's going to really sort of upset them or sort of upset the apple cart in terms of personnel? No, I would assume they're going to try and bring something a little bit different in terms of how they play it. Brennan might be better positioned to give us an appraisal on that front. But like, if you were looking at the two teams and you're saying to yourself, like, Tipperary have struggled to beat Limerick at the best of times. For whatever reason, there just seems to be that type of rivalry there where, you know, they're obviously bordering counties and Even going back to Brendan, when you were playing yourself, I would imagine you kind of struggled with Limerick a fair bit, like even when Limerick weren't at their best, we'll say. So I think when Limerick have a very good hand to pick from, it's very hard to see past them. But having said that, if there's any team that will get the goals that will be required, like the Tipperary have a pretty exceptional forward unit, albeit, as Connor said, you know, some of them now fairly long in the tooth at this stage. Amazing thing is that they haven't really blooded anybody coming through from those under 20 successes. But the reality is as well, maybe they're just none of those guys were good enough. You know, like that's like everyone is saying, oh, Liam Sheedy hasn't brought through, you know, those the players from that age group. I mean, Jake Morris, the obvious one, but the Liam Sheedy is, you know, he's going to have tested these. He'll have looked at all of those players to see whether or not they're capable of making a step up. And then maybe it's the case that they're not able to unseat the lads that are already there. So I think, look, all things being equal, you know, Tipperary are going to go into this as underdogs, and I can't see anything other than Limerick victory. But I don't necessarily see... I think Tip have a chance, but they'd need an awful lot to go right. They certainly can't be dependent on refereeing mistakes for this one, because I don't think Limerick are the type of team to do sentiment.
Okay, so Brendan, give us the case for Tip. What can Liam Sheedy do? Is there a rabbit he pulls out of the hat here, or is it just a matter that Tip be Tip, but just be better? Or... Can that work against Limerick?
Yeah, I think Tipperary have been planning for this Limerick team since the start of the league, when they started sitting back and conceding the puck out. I think they'd probably say to Limerick, look, if you want to run the ball through the middle of us, give it a go. But you're going to run it from your own inside your own 45 rather than around the 65. The second thing that I've seen a change in Tip is the way they're using the ball. They've been smarter. More Limerick-like, if you like. Two people go mad to hear me say that now. But Ronan Maher and Paddy and Kennedy and Barrett and Heffernan, when they've gotten the ball, they've just lamped it in a lot of the games last year, and it's reckless use of the ball. They've learned now, and against Clare, we found Jason Ford, we found Dan McCormack around the middle third with a pass with the head up, and I think that's what we need to do, because last year in that game below in Cork, Tipperary conceded about 1-7 from turnovers and counter-attacks, and that's what Limerick wants you to do. They want you to give the ball away so they get you on structure behind. Tipper becomes smarter in possession. I even see a tactics board peeking its head out at the quarter breaks where the Tipperary team. But, you know, so Tipper have now adapted. I think Liam... You're right, Rory. I think Liam hasn't seen enough from the players that are there, the younger players coming up along. He hasn't seen...
Not yet, Brendan, certainly.
No, like, not yet. And they will come. In a normal league year, you could do an awful lot more, and you'd have a round-robin championship, and you could do a little bit more again. But in a shotgun championship like this, Liam will have a one-year plan, as he always does. And he'll just say, we need to win this year's Our Ireland, next year's one look after itself. So I would agree that Limerick are favourites going into it, but I do think Tip's goal threat will keep Limerick unstable enough to keep them in it. And if Tip can get down to home straight with the experience that's there, you never, never know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good weekend of hurling ahead, I have to say. Looking forward to it. So obviously you got the Joe McDonagh final and the Leinster final and the Munster final, all on RTE television, which is very good. And you've got the Ulster match on Sunday as well, Rory. Yeah, correct. And as always, you can get across all the games on RTE Radio, Saturday and Sunday Sport, and on the RTE website and the RTE News app. So we'll leave it at that, folks. Thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy the matches this weekend, and we'll see you again next week.
Crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it, it's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.